There is a fine line between body positivity and medical truths that many people just don't want to hear. While fat shaming is cruel, and now there's a growing movement of body positivity coming out to help people embrace their natural sizes, a debate has emerged if it has blurred the lines of major risks that are linked with having excess weight. The main message here is not about fat versus thin, but focusing on lowering the risks for heart disease, diabetes, and other chronic diseases. I'm Christy Yai, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be examining the costs and dangers of obesity. The World Obesity Federation has projected that the cost of obesity will soar, with over half of the world's population being overweight or obese by 2035. The reported economic impact of a high BMI could reach $4.3 trillion annually, which is roughly 3% of global GDP, or about the same impact as COVID-19. No country has ever seen a decline in obesity prevalence since 1975, which means that more adolescents enter adulthood with the established risk factors for chronic disease. The biggest cost increases are projected for low and middle income countries, where obesity rates are growing the fastest. Obesity is projected to increase fourfold by 2060 in high income areas and 12 times in lower resource settings. Obesity is detrimental to health, increasing the risk of stroke, heart attack, diabetes 2, depression, and higher cholesterol rates. Diabetes in particular affects 21 million Americans, which push up the bill. A heart attack costs $44,000, a stroke costs $40,200, and end-stage kidney diseases cost $37,000. Even amputating a toe, which is what happens to untreated diabetics, will cost $15,000. And it's not just a vanity thing. Being obese is expensive. The national cost of obesity is $122 billion per year, mostly in healthcare costs. This means that per year, the cost of obesity for a man is about $2,646, and adding the value of lost life will increase it to $6,519. For a woman, the individual cost of obesity amounts to about $4,879. So where does that cost come from? It's more than just medical expenses. Annually, obese women who earn over $30,000 per year will make almost $2,000 less per year than a woman of healthy weight. Obese men, on the other hand, will only lose about $75 annually. The massive monetary distinction between the two obese groups show that women are penalized harder than men for being obese. Another study focusing on US, Canada, Britain, and Denmark showed that women with obesity take a 10% income hit compared to normal BMI women. Obese employees tend to use more sick days than others with a healthy BMI, and they can expect to have a harder time being hired and going up for promotions. Employee productivity is also correlated to obesity. Those who are obese have self-reported limitations than others, including the amount of work that can be performed each day. The average cost in reduced productivity per year amounts to over $350 each year. Other higher costs for obese people include higher insurance premiums for Medicare, higher gasoline use, higher disability pension insurance, and even having to purchase extra seats on a flight. Heavy people's life insurance premiums are 2 to 4 times as large. And now with this in mind, let's bring in Dr. Kelly Ruglis, psychologist and eating disorder specialist.
Sure, thank you so much for having me.
Now, what is the biggest cause of obesity? Is it because there's just too much food and too many calories everywhere? Or is it because we have such a sedentary lifestyle these days?
Well, I mean, I think that's a really interesting question. As a clinical psychologist who specializes in the treatment of eating disorders, I come from a different perspective when it comes to obesity. In general, I don't actually see obesity as a primary diagnosis for anyone. I see obesity as a symptom of a larger issue. And so I think if I'm going to answer it in terms of what I know how most people view obesity, what I would say is I think there are a lot of undiagnosed mental health conditions that actually influence the way we feed ourselves. And because they're undiagnosed, people are struggling. And the only thing that people are talking about is the obvious sign of weight gain. But I don't actually see obesity as a primary medical condition. I think that there's some bigger issues, typically mental health issues going on that impact the way a person feeds themselves.
And how prevalent is obesity rates amongst kids today?
I mean, I think it depends on what you're looking at. I would say that there are some, you know, research studies that are saying that the obesity is such a big problem in children that, you know, our life expectancy as a whole has lowered and that it's a direct result of obesity. There are other numbers that suggest it's like, you know, 30-40% of all kids are struggling with that. Again, like I said, I think that those numbers miss the point and aren't really focusing on the underlying issues and are treating obesity as a medical condition rather than a symptom of something else.
And now, how can we tackle this problem of obesity when it seems like most people are too afraid to even talk about it, arguing that it is anti-body positivity?
Well, I think that's a really important question because, again, my idea, my belief, and what the research really shows us is that obesity is not the real problem. That obesity might be a symptom of a problem, and the idea of obesity might not even exist for some people, right? If we look at the way we even determine what obesity is, that's determined by the BMI. And there's been a lot of research that shows that the BMI was not developed as a way of determining health, that it was developed by a statistician that had no background in health. And we actually have more other tools to help us identify someone's health issues that have nothing to do with BMI. So BMI has been shown in, you know, by research standards to have some racist underpinnings and to give people the idea that they are healthy or unhealthy when it's really not based in health at all. So if we remove the idea of BMI from the table, then that forces us to look at people on an individual basis and look at who they are as a person and look at their health, different health metabolic factors, instead of just saying, oh, if you are this number on a scale and this is your height, we're going to assume that you lack health. And the reason why this is important is because when we look at or we use the BMI as a measure of health, there are people that get overdiagnosed and people that get underdiagnosed. For example, there are a quarter of normal weight people have metabolic abnormalities, which means people that are considered normal weight or underweight have high blood pressure, high blood sugar, and high cholesterol. But if you're not looking at their numbers and you're only looking at their weight, those conditions could get missed. Further testing might not be asked for because they look like they're in a normal body. Likewise, there are folks who are in larger bodies who are being seen as problematic when, if you were to look at their blood work, a quarter of folks who fall under the category of overweight or obese do not have any metabolic indicators that their health has been compromised. So when we only use health as a when we only use weight as a way of determining who's healthy and who's not, we actually end up hurting our provider's ability to really see people as individuals and give them the help that they need. So I think when we're talking about, and I'm assuming when we talk about obesity, what we really mean to say is we're wanting people to have a better quality of life. We're wanting people to have a healthy lifestyle. I think it's important that we actually look at those factors that determine that and not just focus on weight in and of itself.
Does GMO and preservatives play a big role in contributing to the obesity epidemic?
Absolutely. I do think that there's a really big problem with how the food industry has been able to sort of change the way that we feed ourselves without our consent. You know, in general, the idea of the FDA was there to protect us from things like this, but unfortunately, it seems like that institution is no longer as protective as it used to be. And you know, the data doesn't lie. When you look at some of the other countries around the world and the different things that they have said are not allowed in their countries, but are still allowed in our own, the data doesn't lie. A lot of these foods that have been tampered with, no longer treat our bodies the way we think that they should be treated, right? They no longer help our bodies in the way that we are hoping that they will be helped. So I do believe that there is a truth to, you know, our foods being tampered with that absolutely has an impact on our health. But again, I don't believe that it's just about obesity. I believe that it has an impact on a lot of different areas of our life that need just as much attention. And that, again, if we're worried about health, there are real ways besides BMI to identify people that are struggling with health issues.
Now, there are countries that do not have access to foods and malnourished kids who are not getting enough calories. So how is that possible when you have obesity and overnutrients in other countries?
Absolutely. I mean, I think especially when we're talking about children, like we have to acknowledge all the different things that go into how a person chooses the food that they eat. Are there things like food deserts? Yes. Like places where, you know, there isn't a lot of access to high quality foods. Absolutely. Could that influence how a person feeds themselves and therefore influence a person's weight? Sure, but I do not believe that that is responsible for the vast majority of folks that are struggling. And I think that that is a oversimplification of what most people are dealing with who are in larger bodies. I think the other thing to consider is that as humans, we don't all come in one size. We don't all come in one shape. We don't all come with one height. And we're fairly comfortable with the idea that our heights are different and that they're determined by genetics and a lot of other forces that are outside of our control. But we don't like to talk about that in terms of weight as well. There is such a thing as people being able to be healthy at every size. So what that really says is that you can't really look at someone and say, oh, that because they look a particular way that they must be unhealthy or it must be because of not having access to good foods. So you've got a group of people who are labeled obesity, right? Labeled obese, and it probably has a lot to do with genetics, and they might have no other metabolic issues, meaning they don't have high blood pressure, they don't have high blood sugar, they don't have high cholesterol, but they're labeled as problematic just because they're genetically prone to be in a larger body. And then you have folks who have underlying mental health conditions where, for example, depression, one of the symptoms of depression is a change in appetite, right? And so you have someone who might have depression, but instead they go to their physician, and because their physician is more versed in obesity, they'll receive that diagnosis rather than a diagnosis of depression and a referral for therapy. And so, you know, and they, oh, for whatever reason, they can't lose weight. And it's like, well, we're not really dealing with the root issue. Are there some people who might be carrying more weight than their bodies want? Possibly. But I think it takes way more data and support and research to actually parse out who's who.
Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Kelly Ruggles. And when we come back, many countries in the global south are seeing an explosion of obesity because of the rise of transnational food companies looking for growth markets. While in South Africa, there's a lack of access to healthy foods that adds to the community's obesity problems. We'll have more after the break.
Русофобия оказалась выгодным бизнесом.
Они Украину предали, ограбили и отдали на растерзание американцам. Украину, мою родину.
Эти люди готовились достаточно открыто, финансирование проводилось достаточно широко, и мы знаем всех акторов, кто это финансирование получал.
8 лет двигались ровно в этом направлении, чтобы вот расчеловечить русских и разорвать все связи.
Это результат серьезной работы над историческим сознанием.
Преступление против человечества задокументированных на украинских территориях очень много. И большая часть из них совершена при попустительстве или по прямому приказу нынешнего или прошлого киевского руководства.
Уже они давно вышли из легального поля, давно, значит, действуют другими методами, неконституционными.
Это и есть преступление по нацистскому образцу.
In the past two decades, Asia and the Pacific have also experienced rapid growth and modernization. But in parallel, they have also seen a rapid increase in overweight and obese people. It is estimated that 2 in 5 adults are overweight, with Malaysia being the most obese country in Asia, followed by South Korea, Pakistan, and China. India reported over 14 million cases of obesity in children, which is the second highest number of obese children in the world. This is due to the increasing number of hours in front of screens and the rise of inactive hours. In addition, increasingly hectic routines and growing stress are causing people to consume fast foods, which further leads towards obesity. Meanwhile, 45% of adults living in the EU are of normal BMI, while 53% are considered overweight, 17% being obese. The proportion of overweight adults vary across the EU, with the highest shares being the Malta and Croatia, where 65% of adults were considered overweight. Meanwhile, the lowest was recorded in Italy at 46%, France at 47%, and Luxembourg at 48%. As such, the weight loss industry has ballooned along with global BMI as people struggled to shed the extra pounds. The demand for the U.S. weight loss market size was valued at approximately $135 billion in 2022 and is expected to reach $159 billion in 2023. The global weight loss products and services market is expected to grow to $299 billion in 2023. A survey estimates that Americans spend north of $60 billion annually to try to lose weight, trying everything from paying for gym memberships and joining weight loss programs like Jenny Craig to paying for meal plans and apps. And then there's the more drastic solutions, such as gastric bypass surgeries, which cost $23,000, a lap band, which prevents overeating and shrinks your stomach, which costs $14,500, and a sleeve gastrectomy, where a portion of your stomach is actually removed and replaced by a much smaller sleeve, which is $14,900. These surgeries are usually for patients who are very overweight and find it more challenging to live a healthier lifestyle. They all operate in the same way, in which the stomach size is reduced in order to make it more difficult to eat the large volume of food that they're used to consuming. In addition to the risks of surgery, patients will also need to take off about 3 weeks of work following the procedure, as well as the cost of medication. Other natural ways to lose weight include exercise and staying active. And while gym memberships spike every January from a healthier New Year's resolution, about 90% of all new members typically stop going within the first 3 months. Up to 67% of gym memberships go completely unused. Does that sound familiar to anyone? There's also a new medication now for weight loss, like the miracle drug Ozempic, hailed by all the celebrities from the Kardashians to Elon Musk. About a third of people who take Ozempic for weight loss will lose 10% or more of their body weight. And while this drug was originally created to help diabetes patients control their blood sugar, the side effect of rapid weight loss quickly made it a very hot commodity. So hot that it is now causing problems for the people it was originally intended to help. Ozempic is usually not covered by insurance, so only people who can afford to pay $1,600 a month can take it. If you don't take Ozempic every week, the weight reportedly comes right back. And for the African perspective, we turn to journalist Patience Wirgo in Cameroon. So Patience, is there a weight loss craze in Cameroon among men or women?
Yes, it's actually almost a part of everyone's lifestyle nowadays, be it a man or a woman. This is so because, first of all, we have a challenge. We have a challenge, which is that people move away from their villages and come to towns to, you know, look for jobs. And when they get the jobs, they don't have access to, you know, time which could maybe permit them exercise, do some stuff that could keep their body shape in, you know, the best way. But the point now is people have shifted from, you know, just the regular exercises we used to have, because our governments in every administrative headquarters try to set up some sporting facility. We call that Parcours Vita in Cameroon. So every region in the country has one, at least. Yes. And so in the case of, let's say, Yaoundé, where I am, it's situated around Morphe Bay. So if you wake up early in the mornings between 5 a.m. And 7:30 a.m. in the mornings, you would find people, you know, struggling to, you know, jog, walk, and all whatnot, you know, to keep fit.
And do you think that weight loss fads come into the West Africa or other parts of Africa from the West?
It will be a yes and a no. I would begin from the no. The no first, because like I earlier mentioned, you would have traditional methods which people actually use. Yes, and so it had been really very, it was kind of good. It has been proven that it's healthy in the past. So now the only point where I would now put in the yes is when you leave the rural settings where you have most of these things that would permit you do it the local way. In the city, you wouldn't have access to most of the herbs and all of that. So what you would have to do is maybe to look at what you have. And then in cities, when you talk about towns in Cameroon, it's like it's practically copying all of what is happening in the Western world and applying it to your daily lifestyle. So in a town, it will be common for you to see that they are copying the foreign lifestyle. And at this stage, that's when you now see the dieting coming in. They don't actually go in for their local foods because they want to do it the white man way. And then the physical exercising thing too, it's not an African thing. Our styles of exercising, we had our traditional sports, but you know, all of those ones have been abandoned and the copy most of what they have out there. And again, for the liposuction thing, that is Western, so it's not us there. So that's why I would say it's a yes and a no. So it's kind of, you know, it depends on where you find yourself.
Now, as African countries like yours and others slowly become more affluent, do you think more people will suffer from being overweight and therefore have more interest in following diets and weight loss fads?
Well, the tendency is it's actually very easy for you to put on weight. And for Cameroonians, given the kind of genes we have, because we are a country with diverse ethnic groups, so the morphology differs from region to region. For instance, from the Northwest, where I come from, you have people who are always, you know, fleshy, fat. You don't have skinny people from this part of the country. You would have skinny people maybe in the center, in the south, in the east, northern parts. Yes, but when you look at regions like the West region, the Southwest, the Northwest, and littoral regions of my country, people who come from this part, they are hardly very thin. So now, if it depends on how you see yourself. If you know you'll be growing up and putting on much weight, it only dawns on you. First of all, dieting in Cameroon is not before now, it never used to be a cause for concern. It's all of a sudden that people realize that, you know, eating too much and growing too big has some health hazards. So it's actually not, it's not been more than, it's just been within a decade that, you know, their eyes have opened to, you know, trying not to put on too much weight. So at the point we speak, those who had already put on so much weight can only try to follow some dieting programs and to keep shape. But for those who are still growing up, it's easier for them to, you know, try to control the intake of food, because actually there's plenty, like I said, to control the intake of food and not grow out of proportion if you want to be the skinny type. At the same time, we believe that a good African shouldn't be too skinny. So for those who have this frame of mind, what is best for them is to, you know, not bother about how they look. So they just eat and, you know, go with the shape that appears. So that's it. So it depends on an individual. And, you know, it depends on what you want and your body shape goals.
Thank you so much, Patience Wernigo, for your time today. Well, the winners here is clearly the entire weight loss industry, an industry that feeds on people's insecurity and vanity and promotes a quick fix solution. Unfortunately, achieving healthy weight is not a quick fix, but rather a lifelong journey of healthy habits that include eating proper portions and getting in an appropriate amount of exercise. That is not something most people want to hear. And instead, they resort to the overly promoted and expensive weight loss plans and fad diets. While it can help you shed weight quickly, it will not stay off, as research indicates a 95% failure rate of these plans and fad diets. As many as 65% of people will actually return back to their old weight within a year. I'm Christy Ai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.